Moses History Lesson. Commentary for the October 9th, 2021 Sabbath School Lesson by Stephen Terry, Director, Stillwaters Ministry, www.visitstillwaters.com. We completely destroyed them, as we had done with Sihon, king of Heshbon, destroying every city, men, women, and children. But all the livestock and the plunder from their cities we carried off for ourselves. Deuteronomy chapter 3, verses 6 through 7. Early in Deuteronomy, we find the recounting of the Israelites' faithless failure to receive the gift of the promised land they were headed for. A generation familiar with the slave master's whip and their own inability to play a part in their destiny as a people, they quailed when they should have advanced. Despite the evidence of the 10 plagues that delivered them from Egypt and the ongoing presence of God in the camp in the form of a pillar of cloud during the day and a pillar of fire by night, their assumption was that they were to invade and occupy the land by their own strength. Since they had not been able to free themselves from slavery in Egypt through that strength, it seemed logical that it would be impossible to overcome the inhabitants of Canaan. When they were ordered not to go up in their own strength, but did it anyway, the outcome was exactly as they had feared. They suffered defeat. Unable to do as asked, they wandered through Sinai until those who had that slave mentality died off. The generation of those who would enter the promised land in their stead had grown up freeborn. Inured to the harshness of the Sinai, they grew strong for the task ahead, much like the warriors of the desert planet Arrakis in Frank Herbert's Dune. And like those warriors, they had a deep religious conviction of the righteousness of their actions. God favored their actions, even demanding genocidal warfare from his army of zealots, according to the Deuteronomy account. His followers then did exactly that, killing every man, woman, and child they could throughout the Arabah and into Canaan. The scene must have been horrific. It seems that only an existential threat could even begin to justify that kind of response. That threat was the feeling after Baal Peor, where those already inhabiting the land mingled with the Israelites to encourage them to take on the current culture, a culture which was already in theological conflict with their own. Many lives were lost before that Midianite attempt at subversion was overthrown. Ironically, Moses had spent 40 years tending sheep for his Midianite priest father-in-law before he returned to Egypt for the Exodus. The danger of interaction with foreign cultures is highlighted by the course of Israel once they decided to have kings reign over them. Those kings demanded obedience to them above all others, even God. And when they became corrupt through the alliances and marriages they pursued with foreigners, their influence on the ultimate destruction of Israel and Samaria first, then later Judah and Jerusalem, was documented in the Old Testament chronologies and the writings of the prophets. The fear of this contamination produces horrible conflicts, as this powerful and fearful thread is running through the Abrahamic religions even today. On a less violent level, it exists today in the tension between seeing the church as a fortress to keep out the evil or as a shepherd's hut, where the shepherds leave the safety of the fold to look for and save the lost. Which model we choose to follow says a lot about our understanding of the character of God. Despite millennia of apologetics offered in defense of God wiping out almost all of humanity in the Noahic flood, or commanding genocide in the Israelite invasion of Canaan, many have walked away from God, unmoved by these attempts to justify behavior that by modern legal definitions would be horrific criminal acts, like the worst despotism of Hitler, Stalin, Mao, or Pol Pot. It is hard to rectify a God of love with such acts. It demands an answer to the question, How can a God of love not only tolerate such cruelty, but even command it? The earliest attempt at resolving that conflict was the book of Job, where it reveals that things going on in heaven affect us here on earth without us necessarily knowing the cause. Job's response that he would continue to trust God even if he slays him is a sentiment echoed by Habakkuk's call for all the earth to keep silent before God when facing injustice. It can require deep faith based on extensive experience walking with God to have that perspective. Is it possible for each of us to find reconciliation between God as genocidal tyrant in the Old Testament and the God who is love? Some might want to believe that beating someone down is an act of love. No doubt more than one perpetrator of domestic violence has tried to convince their spouse of that. Those that believe such statements too often end up disfigured or disabled, or worse, dead. True love is found elsewhere, and it is most richly displayed in the life of Jesus. Therefore, so many, even among those who are still in their denominations, find hope in the New Testament while rejecting or ignoring the old. It also can occur with those who reject the law in favor of grace. They are not exclusive of one another. In fact, all the Decalogue in the Old Testament occurs in the New. This argues strongly that the reverse is also true. The God of love is present in the Old Testament as well. The prophet Malachi assures us that God is consistent and does not change, an essential element for truth. When we consider the omniscience, omnipresence, and vastness of a being who dwells in every dimension of time and space throughout eternity, past and future, yet present in every moment, it becomes apparent that we probably lack the tools to understand the nature of that being's character. But such a being, if indeed loving, may condescend to supply insights we can understand. For instance, we find in the Old Testament repeated warnings to change course, to avoid harm. Any adult who has children knows the frustration of this. We love our children and try to keep them from harm, but some children decide that risky behavior is desirable, and despite our warnings, they do it anyway. Some are fortunate to escape harm. Others are injured or even wind up in the morgue with heartbroken parents weeping over the result. Though they might have warned their offspring at every opportunity, some would still blame the outcome on their bad parenting. Adam and Eve could have been blamed for such about Cain and Abel, but both children grew up in the same family with the same parents. One son was faithful and the other became a murderer. The love of parents does not negate choice and free will. It would be the same for the love of God. Noah warned everyone of the coming deluge. There was a loving way out. Some might challenge this by pointing out the ark could not have held all the earth's population. But the Bible provides the answer in the book of Jonah. Jonah went throughout Nineveh telling the people they were on a bad path and headed for destruction. The king and the citizens decided to appeal to the God of love and compassion. They repented of their bad choices and determined to change. As a result, God delivered them from catastrophe. If there was a choice here, it seems reasonable to ask if there was a more loving choice in Israel's occupation of Canaan. There was a solution that did not involve genocide at all. God intended to drive the people from Canaan with hornets. Every year, especially in September, aggressive hornets remind me of the role they were prepared to play in Canaan. They also serve as a pointed reminder for me to check my own choices and consider adjustments. Some of us take great delight in picturing God as being more like Mars, the god of war, ready to smack people around with the slightest provocation. They are easy to spot. They exclude people from salvation who sin differently than them and let them know it. Rather than modeling the compassion of Christ, they prefer to strap on a sword and cut down sinners right and left, not caring if they are man, woman, or child. Like Jonah, disappointed with God's compassion toward Nineveh, he eagerly looked forward to watching the city's destruction. Some would rather prove someone is on the wrong path by pushing them to failure instead of loving them toward healing. The former is more about building ourselves up by proving we were right about the person. The latter is more about showing Jesus is right about love, compassion, and service. Which we choose to be is dependent upon how we see God. All of creation is waiting to find out. Thank you for listening to this commentary podcast. You can find the written version of this commentary, as well as more commentaries and podcasts, at our website at www.visitstillwaters.com. May God richly bless you and your family.